When you see judicial rot running rampant and American companies embracing insanity and wokery, you got to fight back, starting with the way that we spend our money. So for years, big mobile companies have dumped millions into leftist causes, and you know, we just kind of took it because another option didn't exist. Well, now one does. Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, and they offer dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks, so you get the best possible service in your area without the woke problem. Propaganda. And when you switch to Patriot Mobile, you support free speech and religious freedom, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, and our military veterans and first responders. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call them at 878-PATRIOT and get free activation today with offer code Dana. Ask about their coverage guarantee as well. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT.
Now he said, yes, we do have the document, but he'll only show it to the chairman and ranking member. That is not how the Constitution works. Everybody on the Committee of Oversight, Republican and Democrats, have a right to see this unclassified document. If he doesn't come forth and allow everyone to see it, we will move contempt charges against him on Thursday. Secretary Blinken had the same problem when he would not give the documents about what happened in Afghanistan. He now realizes, yes, he should supply it to everybody on the committee. Congress has the constitutional right to oversee and to hold this government accountable.
They do. And I don't know why. It's just so weird to me that you have this government agency, that this bureaucratic agency that's like, yeah, we've got some really important evidence here. We're just not going to let you have it. Has to do with, you know, all this stuff we're invested. It's just not going to tell you. You know what that reminds me of? It's like a toddler telling their parents what they're going to do and what they're not going to do. You don't get that authority. Because you ain't the boss of the house. That's how this works. These bureaucratic agencies, they ain't the boss. Welcome back to the show. It is Wednesday, top of our first hour here. Dana Lash with you. You can listen coast to coast, terrestrially or extraterrestrially. You can stream it, you know, since we had this big thing about UFOs yesterday. I totally didn't deep dive or anything into it last night at all. Not at all. Didn't look about reverse engineering a potential alien spacecraft. None of that stuff. Seems like that would, you know, the House is having oversight hearings, just by the way. You can also stream the show. You can watch the simulcast. Let me get the greetings out of the way. YouTube, Facebook, Channel 347, DirecTV. You can all watch it there. So this situation with the back and forth here with the FBI and the House, I guess they think that they're just going to stall out until what? They think that they're not going to have to answer to anything? I'm just really curious as how they think this is going to go down. Because this is not how this works. Not how this works at all. So this thing with the investigation and the documents that they have and the stuff that they need to turn over, I mean, we know just from what the IG has said, from what's come out from the whistleblowers, that there's some, I mean, at least the enough of a suspicion and evidentiary standard to open an investigation. So why can't we be transparent about it? I mean, that's kind of the million-dollar question here. We're going to talk more about this because throughout the program. Also, speaking of the administration, the Biden's government, Biden is preparing to target America's gas furnaces amid the stove crackdown. We were told that this was all in our heads and that this wasn't going to happen. We were told that we were being conspiracy theorists. I thought I was being a conspiracy theorist. I don't want to do it if I'm not a conspiracy theorist, because I was reliably informed, Kane, that this wasn't going to happen and they weren't going to do this.
Yeah, me too.
So what changed? So they are coming for my gas stove?
Wait, they lied to us?
You mean the government was not honest? I am shocked. This is my shocked face and voice. I'm so surprised by this.
I too am shocked.
So much shock. It's just can't even deal. Yes, they said it's a new efficiency standard. They're going to finalize these regulations restricting which home-powered gas furnaces, stoves, etc. we're able to purchase in the future. So I have a business idea, Kane.
Yeah.
Black market gas furnaces and stoves. That's the name of the store.
Absolutely.
Black market gas furnaces and stoves. And just advertise it. Be ballsy and advertise it. And then be like, what are you going to do about it, feds? You're going to come and shut down my little black market gas furnace and stove store? That's like a whole... I just got a great business idea, like a legitimate one from this. So I think I'm going to do it. I swear to you, I will open a black market and I'll advertise it. Dude, I for real will. I'll put it in a strip mall and everything. Here's my, yeah, my black market stoves and furnaces.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Good heavens. Why are they pushing everything to electricity when, and I saw this, our friend Larry was, and Lorraine, who handles the YouTube discussion, a contributor over at Chapter and Verse. Listen to this. So EPA, Biden's EPA is going to issue power plant rules that lean on carbon capture. You know what this means. Here come the rolling blackouts. For California, at least. California is already in the thick of it. I mean, it's summer. It's hell there. They can't even, they don't have enough electricity to share during the day to charge their electric cars. But hey, let's just go ahead and. Yeah, let's just go ahead and like roll over and just, you know. Speaking of California, this is a for real headline. I laughed my head off when I read it last night when I was adding it to the rundown. I'm just going to say it. There's poop everywhere. San Francisco's office district is not only a ghost town, it's also covered in feces. Like, literally. So you know that they had to do, do you guys remember when they did the poop patrol, San Francisco? That's, like, literally what they did. They had a San Francisco, I'm pulling up my notes, because some of you who maybe haven't listened for that long are like, wait, what? Yes, San Francisco has a poop patrol. Now, if you think that's crazy, they make six figures. For real. They earn, I mean, they can earn, with benefits, it's like $112,000-something. I mean, we got in the wrong business. For real. The wrong business. So they said the poop patrol, with the benefits, they earn base salary, $71,000 a year. They, with $112,000 in benefits.
What?
Yeah, dude, for real.
What?
Yeah. This was a couple of years ago. It got so bad with everybody defecating out in the public. You would think that, you know, they would probably try to deal with the homeless issue, etc. But instead, they're like, no, maybe we need more public toilets. Okay, that might be a reasonable response, right?
Sure.
To think, well, maybe it's because we need more public restroom facilities. Okay, so we know what they decided to do. Mm-hmm. They decided to have a public toilet. Sure, a 150 square foot restroom. We talked about this when this happened. It was $1.7 million for an toilet.
Wow.
An singular toilet.
Dang.
That it seems to me like they don't really understand the best way to deal with well and money. That doesn't seem to be a responsible use of taxpayer dollars, does it?
No.
Not really. Mm-mm. So the state said that they were going to withhold funds for the city because the city cannot figure out how to use money efficiently. So they have that, and then they pay their poop patrol six figures. And that poop patrol, they get. It's, what else am I going to call it? What, it's the poop team. What else do you want to call it? They wear the little vests and everything. They go around. They legit scoop up duty. They're doing their duty with duty. Oh, my gosh. Duty. What? It's their duty. Steve says it's Paw Patrol's cousin. It is. It's like Paw Patrol, but with poop. We're never going to get off this topic because I'm five. So this is how bad it is. Literally everything they touch turns to feces. It does. Everything they touch. So they have their gas powered. Everything is going to get regulated out of existence. They've got rolling blackouts. They spend $1 billion on a high-speed rail from LA to San Francisco that no one needed, and nothing ever came of it. This is insane. Now, here's my other favorite story today. I was going through like getting the table set so I could get to this. I'm just going to read the story. It's New York Post. You guys remember Ellen Page, and she changed her name to Elliot Page, and she says that she's a dude. Right. Okay. So Elliot Page says that she experienced a transphobic attack outside of an LA hotel. She said that she was standing on a corner in West Hollywood on her way to the Pink Dot convenience store when an enraged and hateful stranger approached her, shouting obscenities. The man yelled, quote, "I'm going to blanking gay bash you, you blanket." Now, I have never seen any kind of garden variety mouth breather say they were going to gay bash you. I mean, just calling her a name would be, I guess, the societal definition of gay bashing. Who says I'm going to gay bash you? Did he go, this is MAGA country after, and then go get a Subway sandwich? Is that what he did? Elliot Smollier here. Oh my gosh. Juicy Page. It's his name now. Her name now. They said that she went into the Pink Dot shop and that the man allegedly followed her, stood in the store's doorway. Well, I'm sure there's tons of video of this then, right? Because, you know, it happened in West Hollywood. It happened at a convenience store. First off, here's the other question that I have. Why did the guy affirm her gender? Her chosen gender? Because you don't call a woman the F word for gay. That is not a term for a lesbian. You know what I mean? Like, you don't call the lesbian the F word that rhymes with maggot. You don't call, right? That's the gay dude slur, isn't it? Who calls lesbians that? Where are the lesbians at that listen to this show? That's a gay dude word, isn't it? I literally reached, I was like, have you ever been called? And they were like, everybody said that. That's a dude term. So wait a minute. You're telling me that this dude who followed her into the Pink Dot was saying that he was going to gay bash her, but he was nice enough to affirm her gender, her chosen gender? Are you kidding me? Because this 1,000% didn't happen. It's MAGA country. I'm going to go get a Subway sandwich. I'm going to gay bash you. Nobody says, nobody talks like that. That's literally nothing that ever happened. But I am right, right? That word is not used for gay chicks. It's a gay dudes, right? I mean, I don't want to sit here and get technical with the slurs, but I think that that's revealing. I do think that's revealing. So I'm just, you know, I think she wishes that she could be viewed as the F word that rhymes with maggot. I mean, I think that's what she wants, but I just the whole thing seems like very Juicy Smollier to me. It really does. So we have more in store. The latest with immigration, a Texas sheriff is recommending charges, criminal charges, in the DeSantis migrant flights to Martha's Vineyard. They're like, oh, we found the receipts. And wait until you hear, there's a couple editorials about this too, where the left is losing their minds over this. They're like, can you believe that this is actually happening? Is this real? Can you believe he can actually do this? Crazy. Well, yeah, I mean, whether he can do that or whether like the president of the United States is just allowing people to illegally immigrate into the country. I'm curious. What is the fastest growing international crime network that the world has ever seen? It's already passed the illegal arms trade, and soon it will pass the drug trade. Because someone can sell a bag of cocaine one time, but they can sell a child 5 to 10 times per day. Witness the gripping reality of true heroism in the film Sound of Freedom. From Angel Studios, the force behind His Only Son and The Chosen, comes an extraordinary true story of courage and redemption. Experience the spirit of hope and the power of human resilience. And remember the 2 million children who are trafficked every year. Visit angel.com/freedom. That's angel.com/freedom. Buying tickets in advance sends an important message. To show your support, purchase tickets for yourself or pay it forward, visit angel.com/freedom. Witness the gripping reality of true heroism in the film Sound of Freedom. Visit angel.com/freedom. That's angel.com/freedom.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So Apple, in its new update, they're going to stop auto-correcting words I can't say on air, including the word that is often changed to duck, in. I'm just saying. Because you all don't know this because you're angels, aren't you? You're purest of hearts and motives. You have no idea what I'm talking about. You're so innocent. Look at you all innocent out there in radio land. They said that sometimes if you want to type a word, your keyboard doesn't go along with it. Apple Senior Vice President of Software Engineering said, yes, they're finally changed. I mean, it's only been 11,000 years, right? They're finally on it. I mean, I guess I'm sure there's probably some more important stuff, but nobody cares. I don't know. When I see the phrase deadly bacteria, I get a little nervous. So then I see the CDC says something and then I immediately don't believe it. So where do I fall on this? Deadly bacteria that kills up to 50% of patients is now endemic to U.S. Gulf Coast, says CDC, a year after it was first detected in the country. So an epidemiologist, Dr. Julia Petrus, made the warning. It's called, you ready? Burkholderia pseudomallei. Right, sounds right, yeah. It's likely lurking in soil and stagnant water across the 1,600 miles from Texas to Florida. They said that people infected with it suffer melioidosis, a severe condition that can trigger pneumonia, sepsis, and can be fatal. Doctors say they're on alert for the disease. It can initially be misdiagnosed as another infection. I don't know what, I mean, can you kill it with antibiotics? Like, what's the, I mean, so it's just like stagnant water, right? Essentially, like moist soil, that's your favorite word, and stagnant water, right? That's kind of what it is. I don't like any of those things anyway, so just avoid those, right? That seems like the smartest thing to do. This is really wild. New York Post says nearly 30 children were reported missing in Cleveland during the first 2 weeks of May in an extraordinary surge. Nearly 30. Just in the first 2 weeks of May in Cleveland. They said it's extraordinary. They don't have any, there's no record of this, like, to this extent happening before. 27 kids went missing between May 2nd and May 16th, as Newburgh Heights Police Chief John Majoy warned that the disappearance have reached unprecedented levels in 2023. Says there's always peaks and valleys, but this year it seems like a pretty extraordinary year. We're seeing a lot more than we normally see. We don't know if it's trafficking or if they're involved in gang activity or drugs or what it is. He said the majority of the cases are runaways, but he feared some of them could have been victims of predators, whom he likened to wolves in sheep's clothing. That's horrible and terrifying, and I really feel for those families. A new study finds that being happily married prevents working men from burnout. I get it, because they have a family and a wife and all that or whatever to attend to, and they're not going to be burning themselves out at work. That makes sense. It's the National Research University Higher School of Economics. And a virologist hunting mystery coronavirus strain in Ohio wastewater suspects one individual has been affected for 2+ years, like consistently had it for 2+ years. Kind of interesting. We have a lot more on the way. Economics, the latest with Congress versus Ray, and so much more. Stick with us.
Black Rifle Coffee Company, together with the Boot Campaign, are on a mission to raise $1 million to change the lives of veterans. Now through the end of the year, when you grab a can of ready-to-drink coffee, you can help contribute to making this massive donation possible. The Boot Campaign is one of the most renowned veteran-focused nonprofits in the country, working tirelessly to provide life-changing aid and benefits to service members and their families. Black Rifle Ready-to-Drink Coffee is available in several great-tasting flavors at blackriflecoffee.com/Dana or at convenience stores nationwide. Whether it's the berry mocha, vanilla bomb, or espresso salted caramel, every can helps. Fuel your caffeine fix while making a huge difference in the lives of veterans and their families. Black Rifle Coffee Company is committed to serving the veteran community, and with your help, we can all continue to make a difference. Let's raise a can together and keep fueling Americans for a good cause. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana.
Regardless, the report is now here. It has dropped, and it might not have produced everything of what some Republicans hoped for. It is regardless devastating to the FBI, and to a degree, it does exonerate Donald Trump.
Huh. To a degree. I mean, it's completely, totally pig fecal matter. To a degree. I mean, it's a partial turd, you know, a degree of one. They've got to clarify it. I mean, oh, but wait a minute before you guys. I mean, to a degree. No, it's like all the degrees. Yep. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. I mean, they lied to you. They lied to you. They lied to you. They lied to you. I've got a lot more audio here. I mean, there's just so much. Can I just play audio soundbite 4? Do you remember when Barack Obama promised? He said, no, I can guarantee you there's been absolutely no election meddling. There's been no influence in any investigation at all. None at all. This was towards the end of his presidential term when there were already suspicions that people were trying to get involved with this. Audio soundbite 4. Listen to this.
Ability to carry out her duties.
Mr. President, when you say what you've just said, when Josh Earnest said, as he did, your spokesman in January, the information from the Justice Department is she's not a target. Some people, I think, are worried whether or not the decision, whether or not how to handle the case will be made on political grounds, not legal grounds. Can you guarantee to the American people, can you direct the Justice Department to say Hillary Clinton will be treated as the evidence goes, she will not be in any way protected?
I can guarantee that. And no. I can guarantee that not because I give Attorney General Lynch a directive. That is institutionally how we have always operated. I do not
institutionally
talk to the Attorney General about pending investigations. I do not talk to FBI directors about pending
he
investigations.
He looks too smug.
We have a strict line and always have maintained it, previous
so,
presidents.
Just to button this up.
I guarantee it.
He's getting mad at
me. I guarantee that there is no political influence in any investigation conducted by the Justice Department or the FBI, not just in this case, but in any case.
And
oh,
she will
but
full
in
stop,
any.
Period.
And she will be treated no differently.
Guaranteed. Full stop. Nobody gets treated differently when it comes to the Justice Department because nobody is above the law.
Nobody does. That's weird. Nobody does, he says.
That aged like milk.
It did. It aged like milk. It aged like Madonna. Oh, sorry, wait.
Oh, that's harsh.
I didn't mean to say. Shh, brain, be quiet. I don't believe him. Nope. I didn't believe him then, and I have all the evidence in the world to continue not. Because as we've seen, that wasn't the case. I mean, I'm just reading what page is this? 95. Let me just read you a little teensy paragraph from the Durham Report, okay? A little teeny little bit. Quote. The general counsel at FBI headquarters in Washington, D.C., Sussman provided Baker, now remember these are James Baker, Michael Sussman, with the purported data and white papers that allegedly demonstrated a covert communications channel between the Trump Organization and a Russia-based bank, Alpha Bank. You guys remember all of this, right? Do you remember the New York Times breathlessly screeching about Alpha Bank? Right. This is this whole story. So back to the PDF. Quote. Sussman's billing records reflect that he was regularly billing the Clinton campaign for his work on the Alpha Bank allegations. Importantly, on July 29, 2016, 3 days after the purported approval of the Clinton plan intelligence, Michael Sussman and Mark Elias, the general counsel to the Clinton campaign, met with Fusion GPS personnel in Elias's office at Perkins Coie. Sussman billed his time in this meeting to the Clinton campaign under the category general political advice. Thereafter, on July 31st, 2016, Sussman billed the Clinton campaign for 24 minutes with the billing description, quote, communications with Mark Elias regarding server issue, end quote. In compiling and disseminating the Alpha Bank allegations, Sussman consistently met and communicated with Elias. They were working on this Alpha Bank story. And it gets into how they were pushing the New York Times to publish this article titled Investigating Donald Trump, FBI Sees No Clear Link to Russia. They were trying to, this was the same day that it published, they were trying to push them to run a counter story. This secret channel between the Trump Organization and Alpha Bank. So they were trying to say, wait a minute, you ran your story prematurely. Wait, here's this, look. And the article alleged that the FBI spent all this time examining computer data showing an odd stream of activity to a Trump Organization server. And the New York Times conveniently had been provided computer logs that evidenced this alleged activity. But they said that the article noted that the FBI actually never found really any kind of conclusive or direct link, but they ran with it anyway. And on the same date, Slate published an article titled, quote, was a Trump server communicating with Russia? And it literally had all of the allegations that Sussman had secretly provided to the FBI. Oh, my gosh. And then you had David Korn over at Mother Jones. And then they referenced the Slate piece on Alpha Bank. All of this stuff that Fusion GPS had been pushing out there, all of the quote unquote free press was turning it over. They were giddy. These people are so damn zealous. They never stopped at all to say, wait, hold up. why is an entity that actually isn't even is a foreign lobbyist? Because Fusion GPS, if you remember, was hired by Russian oligarchs to lobby against the Magnitsky Act. Now, the Magnitsky Act had to do with a guy who blew the whistle on a Russian embezzlement, and they killed him. And so they wanted to punish these Russian oligarchs, and they were able to do so, and the Infusion GPS was hired to lobby against to have all of this, the word escapes me, to all of the penalties that had been meted out, to have those removed, sanctioned. They had them sanctioned. And so they were trying to get the sanctions lifted. And so Fusion GPS was actually working on behalf of these Russian oligarchs, lobbying against the Magnitsky Act. But they weren't registered as foreign agents. The same thing that Paul Manafort got busted for. Fusion GPS never did. That's the entity that was working with the Clinton campaign. And that's one of the reasons why they were able to get all this Russian stuff. So anyway, back to this thing. These journalists never stopped to ask any of these questions. It was all about pushing the accusation. This reminds me, like I said, they were using the Democrat Party's LBJ pig blinker strategy. Now, if you're unfamiliar with that, back during the presidential campaign of 1972, Hunter S. Thompson had a serialized account. He traveled with the campaigns and was writing about the account, and it was published in Rolling Stone per issue called Fear and Loathing on the Campaign Trail 72. And he relayed a story from the Johnson campaign. And it said this, quote, "This was one of the oldest and most effective tricks in politics. Every hack in the business has used it in times of trouble, and it's even been elevated to the level of political mythology in a story about one of Lyndon Johnson's early campaigns in Texas. The race was close. Johnson was getting worried. Finally, he told his campaign manager to start a massive rumor campaign about his opponent's lifelong habit of enjoying carnal knowledge of his barnyard sows. The campaign manager protested, 'My gosh, we can't get away with calling him a pig blinker. No one's going to believe a thing like that.' 'I know,' Johnson replied, 'but let's make the SOB deny it.'" End quote. They just needed to make this accusation of outlandish impropriety and then just build it from there. That was the whole point. And so they created these two camps of people, particularly within the press, the people who hated Trump so much that it was nearly tangible in its ferocity, right? People who figured he could have done these things, so why not believe that he did? Their hatred of him could justify all sorts of things. I mean, when you tell someone, "Oh my gosh, this guy's Hitler, he's Hitler." Well, hell, who doesn't hate Hitler? I mean, except maybe for Hitler, but he's dead. But you know what I mean? You're going to believe that they're capable of all kinds of things. And you want to believe that they've also done evil things because you hate them. No one ever wants to feel, when you're talking about Trump here, no one ever wants to feel that they're the bad person or they're the one coming up short because they can't justify their hatred. So they hated the guy. They couldn't really justify it. So then they sort of got the cart and the horse in backwards order. Then they decided, well, this makes me just hate him more. See? Things that they would not have believed in the first place had they not hated him so damn much. So it's this vicious cycle. So that was the one camp. Why not believe that he did it? And then you have the people who knew he hadn't done these things of which he was accused. But why not play on the hatred of the dumb people who hate him anyway? Because their hatred, which extended far beyond general policy dislike into some kind of irrational realm, that would predispose them to believe literally any accusation made. So they played them. You have the people who got played and then the people who played them. And there were definitely enough reporters to facilitate this for the DNC. And the DNC was fine for it. Don't forget, along with the Clinton campaign, because they weren't honest about how they were spending their cash. The press, their partisan zealotry suffocated any investigative instinct. It suffocated any kind of curiosity. That, to me, that's the death of the free press. Because it shouldn't matter what the politics of the person involved was. You had government entities that were leaking information and weaponizing different agencies to punish someone because of their politics. And there was no evidentiary basis at all whatsoever for them to do what they did. So they tried to launder discredited oppo in the press to substantiate, to justify getting these surveillance warrants on people in the Trump campaign. And the free press never once stopped and asked about, wait a minute, what are we doing here? Because for them, it became about personality and not the office. For them, it became about personality and not the structure of the republic. They lost sight of their original purpose. These people drove a dagger in the heart of a free press more than any tyrant could have ever done. They themselves discredited themselves with the American public. Trump didn't do it. Trump could have never hurt them this bad. No one could ever hurt someone as badly as someone can hurt themselves. And that's exactly what the press did here. The free press will never recover from this. It's dead. The idea of this watchdog for the people has been so thoroughly destroyed, it will never return. And it makes me infuriated because it is one of the most important institutions in a republic. People have to have a place to go where they can get information. But everybody's an activist today. Everybody's an activist. Everybody wants to be known for something. Everybody wants to have a byline. Everyone's a fame whore. You have a nation full of fame whores. A nation full of activists. A nation full of Z-list politicians who want to start podcasts. You have a nation full of people who are desperate to be contributors. You have a nation full of people who are desperate to be that one person that kicks off the story. They're so thirsty for it. It's the United States of me. And look what it's doing to the institution. People are forgetting their purpose. It should terrify the press. It should terrify people. That you had these huge entities, these government agencies that were running away with zero accountability, freely weaponizing the tools at hand that they are supposed to use to protect the people that they're targeting, all in the name of attaining more power. The press should be saying, we are reporting on behalf of the people for on behalf of them, we're watching this institution. We see these pillars crumbling. Because a smart person would say, it doesn't matter who's in the elected office. A smart person would say, if we're allowing them to do this now, what are we allowing to potentially be done to ourselves in the future? A smart person would see and be a little selfish in how they view this and see, wow, if this is used against people I dislike, what's to stop it from being used against me when my ideology is out of power? They never once thought about this. In some ways, they don't care about self-preservation. They're willing to sacrifice any chance at future protections to do what? To be a stepping stone for these people? I just don't get it. These sycophants? I do not understand a press that are such sycophants that they're willing to not only sacrifice the sanctity and security of the republic, but they're willing to debase themselves in the process. I mean, look at these people. There's a list. The Federalist published a list. Chris Steele, you have Maggie Haberman at New York Times, Paul Krugman, New York Times, Michelle Goldberg, New York Times, Malcolm Nance, MSNBC, John McLaughlin, former CIA acting director. But you have all of these, Greg Gordon, McClatchy, Peter Stowe, McClatchy, Jason Leopold, BuzzFeed, Anthony Cormier, BuzzFeed, Luke Harding, Dan Collins, The Guardian, Gloria Borger, CNN, Manu Rajuk, CNN, Ken Delaney, and NBC. Chris Matthews, Oliver Darcy, CNN, Joe Scarborough, MSNBC, Chris Hayes, MSNBC, David Corn, MSNBC, Joy Reid, MSNBC, Rachel Maddow, all of these people, Tom Nichols over at The Atlantic, all of these people, Jennifer Rubin, WAPO. I mean, oh my gosh. What do people have such low self-esteem and such an absence of self-respect that they're willing to debase themselves to be nothing more than a political whore? Because that's what it is. Let's be frank. Folks, your financial freedom is at stake when the government thrives on creating unrelenting inflation, an astronomical debt, crippling interest rates, and market turmoil that we haven't seen in decades. And now you have an administration that wants to tax everything that you have to fund runaway entitlement spending. You should empower yourself with opportunity and the freedom to pursue success and to keep the fruits of your hard work. And if you want to protect your future, you should call a precious metals dealer that I trust, American Hartford Gold. They can show you how to protect your savings and retirement accounts by diversifying your portfolio with physical gold and silver. And all it takes to get started is a short phone call. And American Hartford Gold can have physical gold and silver delivered right to your door or inside your IRA or 401k. They make it easy. American Hartford Gold is the highest rated firm in the country with an A+ rating from the Better Business Bureau and thousands of satisfied clients. Call today and they'll give you up to $5,000 of free silver on your first qualifying order. Call American Hartford Gold today at 866-887-1188. That's 866-887-1188 or text Dana to 998899. That's 866-887-1188 or text Dana to 998899.
All you have right now is a circumstantial case.
Actually, no, Chuck. I can tell you that the case is more than that, and I can't go into the particulars, but there is more than circumstantial evidence now. So, again, I think...
So you have seen direct evidence of collusion?
I don't want to go into specifics, but I will say that there is evidence that is not circumstantial and is very much worthy of investigation. So
there has been a report from CNN that Wednesday night that the FBI was looking into collusion with the Russians and the Trump campaign in terms of spreading information about Hillary Clinton's campaign. Do you have any information to back that up?
Come on, Adam.
I'm not sure that I can comment on that. I can't say that I think that the investigation that the director talked about at our Monday hearing
is like a trillion 11 minutes long. Because there's so much audio and video of these cats going out there. Yeah. I lied so often. I mean, you're just going to have to trust me about the evidence. You know, I have proving that there's total collusion. They lied to you. Now, we have a lot more on the way, too, because there's some movement in the Biden case. The IRS removed the entire investigation team from the Hunter Biden case.
What?
Uh-huh. The whistleblower says that it's retaliatory. We're going to talk about that. We also have the latest on Daniel Penny. And we're also going to let you know about a sneaky way. Banks are in Texas right now trying to lobby against the bill to stop them from tracking gun purchases.
It's been more than a month since the re-election announcement. Is President Biden going to hold a campaign event ever?
So I will say this to you, Peter. As you know, we follow the rule of law here. We believe in following the rule of law as it relates.
The hell does that even mean? That's not what he asked. He's like, is he going to hold a campaign event? She's like, well, we follow the rule of law. It's the rule of law. Follow it. That's what we do. That's KJP yesterday talking to Peter Ducey. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. You can listen coast to coast terrestrially. You can stream the program. You can watch the simulcast of the radio program as well on YouTube, Facebook, DirecTV, Channel 347. And make sure you subscribe to the newsletter, Chapter and Verse, over at Substack. Lots of good stuff up there. Comes out daily. Now, I don't think he's going to hold one. I didn't actually look and see what he had on the calendar today. I know that he basically did nothing yesterday. He came back from Delaware, and that was it. KJP had the presser. That was pretty much it. That's it. You don't have nothing else to deal with. Okay. So he's an ice cream stop. Yes, thank you, Juan. An ice cream stop. He probably did have that. Probably did have that. I want to get into some of the wokery here because we have this issue with Chick-fil-A. Have you guys seen this? So I was reading about this yesterday. Chick-fil-A, remember the reverse, the boycott of Chick-fil-A when everyone wanted to go to Chick-fil-A because it was what do they call the protest? This was back in 2012. You had the Alphabet community that wanted to boycott Chick-fil-A because they found out that Dan Cathy, the guy who owned it, was Christian. And they thought that you was going to get baptized with a sweet tea. I don't know. I just, you know, who knows what people thought. This Jesus chicken. But anyway, everybody went to Chick-fil-A, right? Everybody loved going to Chick-fil-A. Well, now it comes out that they hired a vice president of diversity, equity, and inclusion, and that this went out, and they've had they have a DEI page. Now, the guys, they hired him back in 2020, but apparently it just now spread. They originally released a statement, Chick-fil-A did, back in 2021 to speak about their company mission with DEI and all of this stuff. And the statement that they had was, quote, "We are better together. One of our core values at Chick-fil-A means when we combine our unique backgrounds and experiences with a culture of belonging, we can strengthen the quality of care we deliver. Chick-fil-A Inc.'s commitment to being better at together means embedding diversity, equity, and inclusion in everything we do." Okay, I have a problem with that. That's not a good thing, because it's equity is not what equality is. And as I've explained before, this is a very Marxist principle. It's critical theory. And at the heart of equity is discrimination, because you have to have discrimination for equity. Equality is against that. So I think it's disappointing to see this, and I don't know why. Yeah, just be about quality. I mean, I have these, you know, Kane notes. I have these questions too. Why can't you just be like, we serve everybody as we always have with quality? The end. All this DEI stuff is branding of the sheep herd. That's what it is. DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion. I mean, I don't know why we keep having to affirm the same stuff over and over again. But then I was thinking about this too, because I mean, this is Chick-fil-A. I mean, this is the entity that I mean, conservatives protested for. And so that statement that I just read to you, that came out in 2021. A lot of people, I guess, really hadn't known that they have this, you know, Marxist DEI statement, and they were doing all of this stuff. And then it came out. Do you remember? And I remember seeing this right when it first came out, and I thought it was performative. I think that some people genuinely have a heart and they want to make this demonstration of treating everyone equally, but sometimes it looks pandering and contrived. And it's this video where is this at? It's a flashback. This flashback video where, which Kathy was it? Who is the Chick-fil-A CEO? He sent out shoe shine packages to store managers to remind them about, you know, contrition and humility, and, you know, to atone for historical participation in slavery. And he was giving this speech, and he got up and was like, started washing the shoes of this other dude on stage. And the other dude on stage did not look humbled. He looked like, wow, this is really, it seemed performative. Listen to this, audio soundbite 9, flashback.
I invite folks just to put some words to action here. And if we need to find somebody weird that needs to have their shoe shine, we need to just go right on over and shine their shoes. And whether they got tennis shoes on or not, maybe
like
they got sandals
like, this
on.
This is performative.
It really doesn't matter. But there's a time in which we need to have, you know, some personal action here. Maybe we need to give them a hug too, brother.
And some stock in Chick-fil-A.
But
I got to tell you,
I bought about 1,500 of these.
This kind of goes along with the line. I had a conversation with Max Lucado once, and he was roommates with the pastor at our church. And I always believe in, you know, talking to people privately and going about it, you know, the New Testament way. But I had been, I wrote a piece about it at the time. I was upset because Lucado was getting into some of this DEI stuff when he was making remarks during lockdown in his sermons. And it made me angry. And so I called him up, and, you know, we spoke for a bit, and I said, you know, I realize, you know, we come from different generations and we grew up in very different parts of the country. And I explained to him, you have to realize that I don't know what kind of life you've lived or what you've experienced or what other people have experienced because of your actions. But this is, you know, what you're talking about, what people have to atone for. This is kind of a foreign concept to a lot of people in my generation we didn't pay attention to that because it didn't exist for us. We didn't know differences. We didn't know any of that. It wasn't pushed up on us, and it definitely wasn't weaponized politically and pushed upon us as it is now. And I told him, I said, when you're asking people to assume culpability in something that they had no part in, it creates resentment. And is that not creating a hurdle for other people? And we had a very in-depth conversation. And I get the same feeling watching this stuff. And so I see this, you know, Chick-fil-A made this higher. I do think that this is different than, you know, Bud Light or Target or Kohl's, because they're not, you know, obviously not doing the same thing that they're doing. They're not advertising for the love of all things holy here, you know, tux swimsuits, good heavens. But it is DEI. And DEI is based in Marxist critical theory. I've written about this for over 10 years. That is a theory based on hatred and division. It is antithetical to Christian teaching. DEI is antithetical to Christianity, period, because it teaches you that there are, I mean, it's like the Klan wrote it. It demands that you acknowledge these differences and you live your life accordingly, and that certain people must be given certain things. You have to employ discrimination in order to have equal outcomes. Instead of having a level playing field, everybody gets an opportunity, you might have different outcomes. Different outcomes are not allowed with equity. That's the difference between equity and equality. And it's anti-biblical nonsense. And it kind of shocks me that a company that is so proud about its faith would incorporate something like this as part of their mission statement. And I do think that Chick-fil-A and their CEOs and the Cathy family should absolutely address that. If you're people of faith, I think you should. And I think you have an obligation to, especially since you've made such a public show of it. And I don't think that is in any way a ridiculous demand. Now, to that point, if I was a strategist for Marxist theory, I would want to make my opponents turn on each other. I would want, you know, the Chick-fil-A, for instance, is sort of a avatar brand, if you will, of conservatism, is it not? I mean, isn't that why you had, who is it, Rahm Emanuel, who didn't want a Chick-fil-A in Chicago, saying that their values aren't Chicago values? And I'm like, I guess it's not about gangs and drugs and shooting. I don't know. And you had leaders in New York City say the same thing. In Austin, didn't they try to drive Chick-fil-A out of an airport in Austin? I mean, it's Jesus chicken. That's how they look at it. If I were a strategist for Marxist critical theory, for wokery, I would want conservatives to turn on the brands that they identify as being part of them and other people identify as being part of them. I would want to foster a sense of betrayal, knives out, and I would want them to go at each other's throats. Now, I don't know why Chick-fil-A felt the need to do this. I know that they are a privately owned company, but I do know that their banks and suppliers and everything else, they may not be. And ESG is a very real thing, environmental social governance standard. So even if they are a privately owned company, that still plays into this. And I think that if you make conservatives turn on an avatar of their business, then I think that really exceeds the expectations of the Marxists that I think have created this environment to where, in which, you know, Chick-fil-A feels the need to release a statement like this. So I think that we need to be very careful in how we deal with this. I don't think that this is the same thing as, you know, Bud Light. I don't think it's the same thing as Target. I think it's one thing to sell children's clothes with images that affirm adult sexual practices, and I think it's another thing to have a statement like this. Now, I'm not saying I support this at all. Like, I just told you I thought it was unchristian. I don't know how I can be more harsh in my criticism of it. But I do think that it's entirely different. And I think that we need to take that into account in how we deal with this. And I think that they we owe each other the opportunity here to make that explanation. Just as we level our criticism, I think that they also owe us, because we have stuck up for them so much, an explanation as to why they feel this is the best move forward and how they think that Marxist DEI fits in with Christian principles.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Utah's Republican Congressman Chris Stewart plans to resign. He's expected to announce his departure soon, according to the Salt Lake Tribune. He's apparently leaving because his wife has ongoing health issues. They didn't elaborate as to what those issues may be, but it will require a special election. So you could have House Republicans be short the numbers, obviously, that they have right now. So they're going to take a already slim majority and make it a little smaller. So that's going to be, we'll have a special election for that. Also, moving on here, this is why, oh my gosh, I told you yesterday why, there was another, like, what, people were sick on a cruise ship, then there was another cruise ship that was destroyed by floods while sailing in a storm. Not a fan of doing the cruises. And then the U.S. government, this headline, is going to appear in court over the Ginger Spare Prince Harry's visa application after his drug revelations in the memoir. He, like, wrote in his memoir as he's trying to come to the United States that he was doing drugs, which is a big no-no, because you can be denied entry. And so now the government has to appear in federal court next Tuesday to answer questions about his visa application. The Heritage Foundation is suing the Biden administration to force officials to release the Duke of Sussex's immigration files. They want to know how he got in the U.S., despite the fact that he was bragging all over through his memoir about doing drugs. Just, I don't know. The billionaire Sackler family that owns Purdue Pharma are given immunity from civil lawsuits from opioid victims in exchange for $6 billion to fund and treat addiction. This is an interesting story. They're paying billions in exchange for blanket immunity, is what it is, in Purdue Pharma's role in the opioid crisis. It is the U.S. Court of Appeals. They approved the settlement, Second Circuit, that would result in the family paying about $5.5 to $6 billion as part of this deal to get the broad protection. And it would end bankruptcy proceedings that began in 2019. And then the settlement money will go towards addressing the worsening opioid crisis. So they're buying their way out of it, is what they're doing. Wow. Wow. Can you imagine if you were, there's specialer, I guess. Al Pacino is going to be a dad at age 83. Daily Mail says he's joining the old dad club. I think that's, can I be honest? I think it's cruel. 83 years old. His girlfriend's 28. She's 8 months pregnant. He's 83. He's not going to see this kid grow into adulthood. I mean, statistically, it's kind of cruel. Is it not cruel? I don't know. Anyway, I guess they're happy about it, but it's weird. I just got to say, it's kind of weird, Kane. It's just odd. Just saying. I don't know. And then the New Yorker has a piece, which we're going to talk about later. The headline, The Rise of Latino White Supremacy. They say that Latinos are potential perpetrators of white supremacy. I guess because they're white adjacent. I don't know. They're white adjacent. That's what the media has been trying to push for the longest time.
Decarbonizing energy. The United States is taking a bold action to put our energy sector on a path toward net zero emissions by no later than 2050. Through measures like our Inflation Reduction Act and the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, we're investing tens of billions of dollars in the scale up of new technologies like offshore wind, advanced nuclear, and clean hydrogen. We're building a clean transportation sector, from expanding electric buses, electrifying our government fleet of vehicles, to providing new tax credits for making and buying electric vehicles.
Yeah, those tax credits are kind of meaningless in a time when your purchasing power has been slashed due to inflation and the recessionary period. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. You can listen coast to coast. You can also watch the simulcast of the radio program, Channel 347, DirecTV, Facebook, and YouTube as well. This comes after, and we've talked about this, the big EV push, the leverage when we were looking at the, without these requirements, the sales of EVs, dramatically different. I mean, it's not going to accomplish a greener world. It's not going to do that at all. Our friend Alex Epstein, he is the author of Fossil Future, And you can also read him on Substack as well. And he's the founder and CEO of the Center for Industrial Progress. And he's proudly pro-fossil fuels, as we are as well. Alex, good to see you. Thank you for joining us. I just wanted to get your, although I can kind of predict it, I wanted to get your response to what the president was saying here, because he spoke just a little bit ago, earlier this afternoon, repeating pretty much the same thing that he just said in the clip that we played. It's unrealistic, and it seems more of a, this has nothing to do with green, not at all.
I mean, I think to call it unrealistic is really charitable. I mean, it's just profoundly destructive and based on falsehood. So let's just take his latest measure, which is he's attempting to use the EPA to mandate about 2/3 of cars be EVs by 2032. So this is less than 10 years. We're about 6% of current sales are EVs. And this is only with massive, massive subsidies and incentives to do it. They can only get it up to 6%. So they wanted to multiply 10x in the next 9 years. So first of all, this is forcing people to use something that's not good for them. If people were willing to choose EVs on a free market, that's amazing. That's great. But the fact that you want to force them shows that it's not going to be as good. And particularly for poor middle-class people who can't have an EV as their second car or third car, as so many wealthy people do, like they are being forced to have an inferior vehicle. And this is depriving Americans of the freedom of mobility, which is a great thing. So that itself is terrible. But you couple that with this is placing a massive new demand for reliable electricity on a grid whose supply of reliable electricity is declining. So this is absolute madness. You know, where I live in California, I happen to be in Dallas today, but which also has its own electricity problems. But where I live in California, you know, Newsom announced no more internal combustion engines. And then 5 days later, literally, he said, don't charge your EVs because we don't have enough electricity now. Why don't we have enough electricity? Because of his anti-fossil fuel policies. He's been trying to shut down reliable power plants and replace them with unreliable solar and wind, which doesn't work because those can go to near zero at any given time, as Texas saw during the freeze. So it is an absolute catastrophe to make us incredibly dependent on electricity and then destroy the supply of electricity. And that's what this so-called green initiative is doing. So it's not, I mean, unrealistic. It's just profoundly destructive and dangerous, and we really should be sounding the alarm.
And isn't it true, Alex, that even if we did, just say arguably that we had the infrastructure in place and we were able to even do something like this, we still don't have enough materials in the planet itself to even support widespread use of, you know, rare earth elements, green tech, the way that they're talking about with the reductions that they want, the percentage of people that they want reliant on this. From everything that I've read, and I think you've addressed this too, there, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong here, but there isn't even enough of those resources to even facilitate that, to support that.
There's an important distinction here, which is there's not enough available resource in terms of reserves and what's possible on a near-term scale. So if you did like an MRI of the Earth, there is very likely enough of all these materials somewhere in the Earth, but you don't get access to things because they exist somewhere in the Earth. You have to actually have a way of getting them economically. They're not economic, otherwise we wouldn't have to pay for them via taxes, but even at anything that's not totally insane, we have nowhere near the scale. So here's an important statistic. Like, no major extractive industry, so something that's taking stuff from the earth, has doubled in a 10-year period once it reaches a certain size. This whole green revolution involves 10 plus forms of minerals doubling in a decade. And this is in an environment which is an anti-development environment. So Biden talked about that infrastructure bill, bipartisan. Well, part of the reason it was bipartisan is because it was still anti-development. They didn't change any of the anti-development policies like NEPA, the National Environmental Policy Act. And Biden just recently banned mining in one of the most promising sites for all of these, quote, green materials in Minnesota. So we have an anti-development environment, and we're promising totally unprecedented, heretofore impossible levels of development. This is not a serious movement that wants a new form of energy. It's just looking for rationalization to destroy the energy that exists today, which is overwhelmingly fossil fueled.
I mean, I look at this. We're talking with Alec Epstein, whose book Fossil Future is a must read. It lays all of this out. I look at this honestly as just a way to undermine our national security and our energy sovereignty, for the lack of a better way to put it, and make us reliant upon China. I can't think of, these are the steps that you would take if that was what your goal was.
They were, but I don't know if you've noticed this, but they pitch it as, oh, this is going to make us amazingly energy secure. Like, this is because we're not going to depend on Russia. We're not going to, yeah, but the dependence of us on Russia for oil and gas, let alone what's needed, which would be even less if we were more pro-energy here, is nothing compared to the dependence of the whole so-called renewable supply chain on China. I mean, they can cut off huge parts of that supply chain and destroy it. They are controlling the stuff around the world. So it's fair to ask what is going on, because just take destroying our grid and the security of our grid. What would you possibly advocate besides destroy the supply of reliable electricity and increase demand if you wanted totalitarian control over people's lives? It's one of the best ideas I've ever heard.
That's the way to go about it. And also, of course, we can't forget about the gas stoves. At first they said, yes, we're looking at this. We need to regulate these essentially out of existence. No, we're not. That's a conspiratorial talking point. But then, yeah, we are. I mean, when you hear people like Jennifer Granholm and, you know, some of these other lawmakers, that's exactly what they're talking about. I know you've spoke on this. I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on it, because as someone who loves to cook, I will never use an electric stove. They're trash. They're absolute garbage. Gas is the way to go. I will only use gas. I will cook on an open fire before I ever use an electric stove. I wanted to get your thoughts on this.
I mean, well, first of all, this anti-gas stove thing is a part of this, quote, electrification movement. So it's notable. Again, they're increasing demand for and dependence on reliable electricity and then destroying the supply of reliable electricity. So every time I see one of these things, that's one thing that scares me even more, because it makes our electricity less and less reliable, and they have more and more control over just the use of energy in our lives. But yeah, if people check out energytalkingpoints.com, one of my websites, and you search gas stoves, I have all the details you could want on this.
You were basically the one, not to interrupt you were the one who also busted the study that they were using to try to undermine the safety of gas stoves, because they were saying, oh, they're so dangerous and these are all the fumes and chemicals that they're putting in your house. But it's true that they did the study in a completely like sealed room with no ventilation, and that's what they used to substantiate that claim.
Well, I debunked part of it. I'm not sure which debunking you're talking about, but I mean, so this is the thing. They had a study, and I believe it was something like they had some precise claim about this increases the incidence of asthma by something like 12.7%. Yeah. Anytime somebody makes that claim about asthma, you know 100% that it's BS. Now, asthma is not a virus or bacteria in your body, right? It's a set of symptoms. So, and its causes are not very clear at all. For example, as pollution has gone down in many places, asthma has gone up. So the idea that just air pollution causes asthma and it's that simple, let alone you can quantify it to fractions of a percent, this is nonsense. So you automatically know you're dealing with a charlatan. But here's the real way you know you're dealing with a statist charlatan. If they discover some actual danger of gas stoves, or at least gas stoves without proper ventilation, why don't they just share the information with you and let you decide to do with it what you please? Maybe it's, hey, you should ventilate your home more. Maybe it's a pretty small risk compared to other things, and you don't really care about it that much. You want to focus on other things. But notice whenever somebody thinks they need to use science to dictate your life, then they're almost always abusing science. They're using it as a means to statism versus as a means to inform you. And that was certainly the case with this pseudoscience. So it's no surprise it's pseudoscience if they're trying to use, quote, science to force you instead of use science to persuade you.
Yeah, no, I agree with that entirely. We're talking with Alex Epstein, whose book Fossil Future is a must read. Okay, last thing. This kind of going back a little bit to the China dependency, because obviously we have foreign policy concerns as it relates to China and Taiwan and shipping coming out, you know, near South China Sea, et cetera, et cetera. We had this conversation on air earlier this week because I'm a huge World War II history buff. And after World War II, after Pearl Harbor, we had this manufacturing capability that was amazing. We were also energy self-sufficient. There were so many things that the United States could rely on itself to accomplish. And when I see us becoming beholden to the very geopolitical foe that we're supposed to be kind of standing off against in the Pacific, I wonder what the future of the United States is going to be if we have to be beholden to these opponents, these ideological, you know, et cetera, opponents like, you know, China or Venezuela or Russia for, you know, dirty oil and gas or for rare earth elements. Without the, you know, refinery capability and the extraction capability here because of this administration, if this doesn't course correct within the next election or so, Alex, where do you see this going?
It's a really scary situation. I feel like we're in one of these situations where you look back at history and you think, what were they thinking? Like, this was obvious that there was a huge threat mounting, and they did nothing. So you look at China, has the explicit goal, so communist China, of being the world's leading superpower by 2049. And what are they doing to accomplish it? One of the things is they're seeking, like, essentially total dominance of all critical minerals around the world, both their extraction and their processing. What is the United States doing? We are following this net zero idea, which is basically just saying, let's abandon our use of fossil fuels, even though there's no cost-effective alternative. So we're gutting our energy capacity. We're also more broadly opposing development. So we don't even have the ability to mine for, let alone process, all of these different minerals that we're becoming increasingly dependent on. And then, of course, we're just getting in all of these like cultural things and fixating on all these different kinds of things. And it's just like, what do you think is going to happen? And, you know, of course, they're also focused on very advanced weaponry, this kind of thing. And then our military is focused on these PC things and also being net zero. Like, the military needs a lot of jet fuel. There is no net zero way of having jet, and you should not be pursuing this. As I agree with Elon Musk on this. We should be absolutely focused on our defense for military. So China's purpose is becoming the world's leading superpower, and our purpose seems to be to be appeasing the sensibilities of the most irrational people in academia. And those two purposes, one will win, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, very true. Alex Epstein, you can find him on Twitter. You can also get his book, Fossil Future, and find energytalkingpoints.com, which I think you should have bookmarked because it is just an absolute wealth of information. Alex, so good to see you. Thanks so much for joining us. Would love to have you back also, because you know this issue is not going to go away within the next couple of years at least.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
Man, I don't even know what this is. I've got a whole, first, can I just, let me start with doing something weird. I'm telling you, Portland man is giving Florida man a run for his money. I got to show this headline. A Portland pastry chef mauled by off-leash dog, dog's handler promptly ODs on fentanyl. It's a pastry chef. This is in Portland, recovering after being attacked by a dog on Monday of this week. Cheryl Wakerhauser owns Pix Patisserie. She says she was out on a run along Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard. She was attacked and mauled by a dog. She reports the dog was off leash in a parking lot. The dog grabbed her leg, attacked her legs and arm. She has 35 puncture wounds. So then she caught the eye of a driver who turned around and honked her horn to scare the dog off. She says at the same time that happened, a man with a leash walked up, said it wasn't his dog, and then led the dog away. Another witness followed the man and the dog, led police to them. And then while this was all happening, apparently the guy who owns the dog who was there apparently ODs on fentanyl. He literally ate fentanyl while the police were taking the dog. He tried to run away and then got a couple steps away and ate fentanyl and then OD'd immediately.
Like suicide?
I don't know. I don't know, man. That was ABC Channel 2 in Portland. That's a real story. Oh, let's see. So we got this. A Cape Coral man fell through the attic while hiding from police. He was, cops arrived. This was at a 28-year-old's residence, Daniel Flores. They knocked on the door, Lee County Sheriff's Office. They got no answer. They saw, the sister said she saw him go into the attic. Detectives knocked on the door. They tried to speak with him. He had an active warrant out for his arrest that they were serving. And they waited for like an hour and a half, no response. He was still in the attic. And then he literally fell through, took their fan down and everything. Fell through, he got cut up a little bit, and they took him into custody. That's never, why do people think that they're going to hide from police? I don't know. And then there was we may have to come back to this one because this woman is crazy. This Florida woman tried to run over her ex. She got shot at. Then she set her own car on fire in Miami-Dade.
I say this with conviction. I think Ron DeSantis is far more dangerous than Donald Trump for a very specific reason. Donald Trump is willing to ignore the rules, ignore the Constitution, and frankly lead to the incitement of January 6th. But Donald Trump is a transactional figure. He'll do whatever it takes to win. Ron DeSantis, I believe, actually in his ethos, is a culture warrior who wants to take us back 100 years and believes he can use the Constitution to that end and ultimately has a very dark vision of what America will be. So the idea of pardoning January 6th convicts, if you will, at this point, is because he believes we are engaged in a real war that he has to win.
Did this tool bag just like inadvertently cut an ad for the DeSantis team? Because it's what it sounds like. I don't even know who this guy is. We had him come up. The guys got him for audio today. And I looked and I was blocked. I don't know who this guy is. I am today years old hearing of this cat. And he's had me blocked on Twitter, you pansy. Welcome back to the program. Top of the third hour. Your mean, ignorant curmudgeon here with you. Sometimes lovable. Dana Lash. You can listen. It's true today. You can listen. It's because I'm sunburnt by accident. Don't lecture me. I love SPF. It's my best friend. But I think mine's expired. It was bad. It's why I'm dressed like a mama on TV. Anyway, you can listen coast to coast. You can stream the show. YouTube, good discussion. I'm sure they're making fun of it, too. It's okay. You get a pass. Facebook and Channel 347 on DirecTV. So I had to legit look this dude up. I was like, who is this guy? Who is he? And he's David Jolly. He's a former Republican, as if you didn't know, because if you were watching the simulcast, you might be like, "Who? What's with the MSNBC logo in the bottom?" Yeah, because he's an analyst there. That's what these guys do, like Kinzinger. They lose favor in the Republican Party because they're too, they turn into leftists, and then they lose influence. And so in order to feel good about themselves again, they sign a contract with like the MSNBCs of the world. And they go there because those are the only people who will take their opinion seriously. But the sad thing of it is that nobody would care who David Jolly is if he wasn't milking the teat that was, I was the former Republican so hard. That's the only reason his opinion counts. It's because I was a former Republican. I used to be a member of Congress, this former Republican, and he's willing to trade on that and then talk smack about his own side. And then MSNBC props him up as an excuse to say, as justification for their claims that while Republicans are just they're so mean and so bad, too constitutionalist. I mean, what he was describing right there sounded like a campaign ad. Can you believe he wants to take us back to more of the Constitution? Scary. More constitutionalist? So terrified. Much scares. It's so just, gosh. Yeah, this turd has me blocked on Twitter. I don't even know who he is. Should I feel impressed or slighted? I don't know. I'm flattered, I think. It's like sometimes I find these people. I'm surprised Kinzinger hasn't. Gavin Newsom follows me for some reason. He really likes the abuse. I have no idea why he follows me. I have an assortment of some of the most interesting followers ever. Boy George, who I've always loved Culture Club. George Clinton. Of George Clinton P-Funk. I've always loved them. That was like one of the first CDs I asked for when I was in junior high. I legit straight up asked for his music because I liked it. And my mom was like, what? But he follows me on Twitter. I think they like the gun stuff. I think he likes the gun stuff, like the two-way stuff, right? Big Boy follows me on Twitter. I think it's the two-way stuff. I mean, we don't always agree with everything, you know, but you can still be cool to other people. I'm totally fine with that. But this guy? Who is this? Who is you? Who are you? What's good, David Jolly? I don't even know who you are and you block me. Now, if he was still in office, could I claim that I was like my rights were being violated or something? Yeah, and sue him and like get money. I feel so slighted. Look, I'm proving my damages. All right. So this we were talking about the debt ceiling. If anything changes with it being horrible, I'll let you know. I'm kind of done. We spent about 2 hours talking about it. Coming up, we have Judge Jeanine Pirro, who's going to be joining us. She's got a new book out, Crimes Against America. You know, it's shocking. She's not a fan of the administration, Kane. Right. I don't know if you knew this about her. You know, she's not a strong personality or vocal about her beliefs at all.
You're way off a little. Just being silly.
I have to tell you, whenever her name comes up, whenever she calls me and I see her name on caller ID, she is the call that I look most forward to, because she, God love her, she's like the type of woman I would hang out with. She just doesn't say hello. She's like, well, listen, you know, she just doesn't. It's so great. I love it. She's so animated. And she loves dogs too. All right. So she's going to be joining us at the bottom of the hour. But I'm sure she's has some thoughts about the debt ceiling and your tax dollars, as do you. Okay, so can I touch on the wokery again real quick? Because now I put this on Twitter and I have everybody, and Lorraine, who moderates the discussion on YouTube, and she's a contributor at Chapter and Verse, she also reminded me about Kohl's. Man, I have a cousin and an aunt that love them some Kohl's. Like, they're into the Kohl's cash and all of that, which I didn't. That's a big thing. They're like really into it. The latest retailer facing a boycott because they were selling a pride onesie for babies. They say it's time for a bud lighting. That actually is the most. I love that it's a verb now. Yeah, you're going to get bud lit. It's going to happen. So they had. I don't care if you have merch for whatever you want to have merch for. But when it is, can we be real? It is sexually themed. Why are we acting like acknowledging what it is as a slight on someone's private adult decisions? Everyone has their own opinions. I don't care right now because I'm busy and I'm sunburnt and I don't care and I don't want to be bothered with your drama. You know, not my monkeys, not my circus. But when you've got a onesie, it's weird, right? Like, do you have to merch out the babies too? That's what this is. It's all merchandising. Like, I think the plants at Lowe's are a little too much. Like, really, here's your gay tomato, your gay mato. Woo! How is it going to produce? They said, in case you need clothes, somebody was giving a smart aleck take on this. They said, in case you need clothes for your gay or trans 3-month-old, Kohl's has you covered. I mean, they have, the sizes are like for 3 months. Why? Like, why does that need to be a thing? Why? Why is it? Why? For the love, why? Why do we got to do it? They said, it's the baby Sonoma community pride bodysuit set. And it's the flag, and then some of it is so trying. There's like a wiener dog and a kid in a wheelchair and somebody running with the flag. I forget what all the other ones are. So they have, part of it is like it looks like a boomerang on the flag. It's the white, pink, and blue, and then brown and black. I don't even know. Anyway, they messed it up. I don't even know. But why is this a thing? I don't know. And then they have La Love is Love and Pride of the Rainbow. Okay, just stop. Nobody cares. Just stop doing it with the kids. Can adults stop this is adults making kids fight their battles. You are a loser if you have to have kids fight your battles. I get that that's a thing on the left, right? I saw it at Parkland. I saw it after seeing it. I've seen it over and over again. Adult leftists love to hide behind kids and use them as shields to deflect any kind of criticism or disagreement or anything else related to the viewpoints that they are promoting publicly. It's the same thing. Just stop. Do you have to merch everything out? If you want to have like a grown adult t-shirt, fine. But I'm just like, let's be honest about what it is. It is a sex-based thing, like actual intercourse-based thing. Why is whether or not the kids are involved the measure of tolerance? These same people lose their minds over gun right groups teaching gun safety courses to kids. They lose their minds. That doesn't even have anything to do with sex. See what I'm saying? And that's actually an issue of safety. They act like we're indoctrinating, you know, you're indoctrinating kids or something. So now they're bud lighting. It's like the Christmas tree lighting. It's the bud lighting. The move of this, and it's not just, when you saw how much money Target lost, I still recoil when I hear people say, oh, it's just a conservative thing, or it's just, it's not. I'm sorry, but Target's not losing that much money. As much as I want to inflate the importance of my own viewpoints and use that as a way to, you know, try to convince you to agree with me more because, you know, popularity, if I'm being honest, this is more than just conservatives that are doing this. These are moderates, independents, and probably some classically liberal people too. They're just being quiet about it. They're not like, I'm boycotting this. They're just not going. Same thing with Bud Light. I mean, for the love, free beer with a rebate. and people weren't getting free beer on Memorial Day weekend. That's not just conservatives. That's everybody. And I understand that some people are worried about conservatives not understanding the difference between strategy and tactic, and I agree with that. However, I think the overall strategy of these companies, I think they fumbled with these tactics. Because I don't think that the strategy of all of this earned media attention is helping. Now, with the North Face stuff, that might be different. Because I don't know anyone who is serious about going outdoors that goes to North Face, right? North Face, if I'm being real, is like the Lululemon of outdoor wear. Everyone I know who wears Lululemon, like they're the people, literally all my girlfriends who work out do not wear it. They don't wear it at the gym. They wear it out. They don't actually wear it at the gym. They wear their old ratty stuff at the gym. But that's like for people who go to Planet Fitness in full makeup. It's like that kind of stuff. Nobody goes to North Face and actually wears this stuff out. Nobody's going to, I'm going to go hike, you know, the Incan Trail. I'm going to go to North Face and pick up some gear. No one does that. That's not what they wear. They don't wear that stuff. It's not for serious people. But a bunch of nut-eating, Birkenstock-wearing tofu lovers who drive Volvos love it. So maybe with that, I don't think the North Face is going to actually be impacted by, you know, if those people, I don't think they're going to lose their little market share. But they're a little bit, they've become a little more niche, if that makes sense. So this, the culture thing, it's more than just, it's not even really about who's gay and who's straight and who's, you know, it's about, can we not have the kids involved? Can we not bully other people? Because it feels like the pendulum has swung totally the other way. It went from behind closed doors, don't ask questions, to the doors are open and you have to be there bedside and applaud. Big difference. All I'm saying, we have headlines on the way. I have a Florida headline that I really don't want to save for tomorrow. Kane found it. I really don't want to save it for tomorrow. I'm going to need a really long time to talk about it because it has to do with a ghost and a break-in. It's hysterical. But we do have headlines, and then we have Judge Jeanine Pirro is going to be joining us as well. Do I call her? Like, she always is like, call me Jeanine. I'm like, okay, Judge Jeanine. She's like, that's not what I meant. I'm like, you're a judge. Like, I don't know. I'm old school.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Kane, this might interest you because you're kind of a 90s, you know, coming of age young adult as well. 90s video games and Vegas neighborhood streets. At Las Vegas, I think this is our friend Larry who sent this over. Las Vegas neighborhood has streets named after a 90s video game franchise. It's in Henderson, Nevada, and it's part of the Cadence Master Planning Community. And they said that it's done by Harmony Homes, and they have all the street names are inspired by Pokemon. So all the creatures. So they have like Jigglypuff Street, which is actually kind of amazing.
Meet me at Pikachu and Jigglypuff.
Right. Yes, right. So that's kind of neat. I mean, it's different. I mean, I would want to know who lived there. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Right. All right. So Indiana, I did not know this band existed. Is going to lift, guys, just in time for summer. The ban on throwing stars in Indiana is lifted. Under Senate and Rolled Act 77, Indiana is going to regulate throwing stars the way that they do any other knife-like weapon, which includes a ban on school property. Business owners say they're taking advantage of it. They have people coming into the Flying Squirrel X thrown in Speedway. They said that people are wanting to, like, throw stars as well. He said, but he's going to dull the edges of some of the blades. But I want a throwing star. I went nunchucks after I saw seeing John Wick 4. Like, I am hell-bent on becoming an expert at nunchucks now because that was amazing. Also, what is this? Oh, this is the Chicago Mpox outbreak. I don't even know what this is. A cluster of Mpox?
Monkeypox.
This is the monkeypox?
Yeah.
Heralded as a... They said that the way that they responded to these outbreaks in 2022 was considered a public success. But they said that now there's like a problem in Chicago. I don't know. I would think that the shootings are like the big issue. And China rejected the Biden administration's request for a meeting between the military leaders. Make sure you sign up for the newsletter over at Substack, Chapter and Verse. All kinds of good stuff. And we're here at the bottom of this third hour on this Friday. We made it to Friday. I've been really interested in watching the back and forth of this. So Netflix has decided to make a docudrama on Cleopatra. and they had it cast. They have 37-year-old English actress Adele James as the title character. And then it all went to hell because some people got mad. Not for the reasons that you think, though. So Egypt is mad. Like, the entire country of Egypt is mad. And they have slammed Netflix for what they say is the falsification of Egyptian history. In fact, the phrase that was used, and it's a Jada Pinkett Smith docuseries, so that tells you everything you need to know right there. Egypt and some critics from Egypt have accused Netflix of, and I'm using their words, blackwashing, and by casting a black British actress as the Macedonian Greek ruler. Whew. It is insane. And I am just sitting back and watching this. Now, Jada Pinkett Smith had said she wanted to tell the story. She said, "We don't often get to see or hear stories about black queens." They had the trailer that they released a couple of weeks ago, and Egypt is infuriated. Like, literally Egypt. The Egyptian Ministry of Tourism and Iniquities shared images of the bust, and they argued that she wasn't black. They said she was Macedonian. She had, in fact, Hellenistic characteristics and a light complexion, is what they're arguing. That's the Ministry of Tourism and Antiquities in Egypt. And the Secretary General of Egypt's Supreme Council of Archaeology, Dr. Mustafa Wuziri, said that the appearance of Cleopatra in the upcoming series was a, quote, falsification of Egyptian history and a blatant historical misconception. That was a direct quote. I've never quite seen anything like this before. I mean, I know that there was like at one point Gal Gadot was attached to a film. They've been trying to make a new Cleopatra film forever, and people got really, woke scolds got mad because they were upset that it wasn't a black actress cast. And then there were arguments over Cleopatra's, I guess her heritage and her history, her family history. And historians, including, I think, the single most prolific biographer on Cleopatra, was saying, well, you know, it's Macedonian and Greek, and had very, and was described as having European features, or what we would call European features today, is what he had said. I actually had this previously in some email prep for you, but with everything going on, we're getting to it today, but they said that Dr. Wuziri said the film is classified as a documentary and not a drama. And that was like their big sticking point. They said this isn't sort of, you know, a historical fiction, you know, fiction based off something historical. They're saying that they were presenting it. He was upset. He was saying they're presenting this as a documentary. And he said the not a drama, and the order that the owners of its industry have to investigate accuracy and refer to historical and scientific facts in order to ensure, he adds, that the history of and civilizations of people is not falsified. He blasted Netflix, along with other anthropologists and archaeologists and historians. Whew. They blasted Netflix for not even referring or consulting with them when making the series. Oh my gosh. They also had an incredibly lengthy statement. And Egypt attached, the Ministry of Tourism and Antiquities attached all these images of artifacts, coins, the busts, the, you know, all kinds of whatever depiction that they could. They said that they were showing off her Greek features. It's supposed to air on May 10th. And they were showing off her Greek features, etc. They had a painting from a villa at Herculaneum in modern day Campania, and they were saying that they were arguing that it was a posthumous portrait of Cleopatra. They were showing like her imprint on coin, everything. So they I mean, it is so long. It is, I can't even get into everything. It is such a long, and the letter and everything that they attach to it. And they really got into the history. I actually learned a lot more about her dynasty and her family from reading this. But it was pretty unbelievable. And they said that the show also featured content that violated Egypt's own media laws. And they, wait, there's more. There's a lawyer, because they had a suit filed against them too. Oh yeah, yeah, they had a suit filed against them. They also had the former antiquities minister from Cairo slammed it as completely fake. They said Egyptians were reacting with horror to it. They also said that the anthropology studies and DNA studies conducted on mummy and bones confirmed that Egyptians do not bear the features of South Saharan Africans. They said that Netflix is trying to provoke confusion by spreading false and deceptive facts that the origin of the Egyptians about the origin of the Egyptian civilization. They said that one lawyer, Mahmoud Al-Samari, filed a complaint with the public prosecutor demanding that they block access to Netflix over it. And they said that the show that Netflix was, quote, trying to promote Afrocentric thinking, distorting and erasing Egyptian identity, end quote. Whoa. Whoa. So I've never seen a fight like this. Have you?
No. Our whole
country? Yeah, everybody's mad in this country, apparently. Like, Egyptians were horrified, according to some of the reporting. They were horrified. There's, like, if you look at some of the European reports of it as well, they're, like, highly critical. What makes me mad is that it's because they don't come right out and say it, but it's almost like, especially if you look at like French reporting on it, they're attributing this to, oh, this is American wokery nonsense at work. I thought we imported that from them. Didn't we?
I think they're already over it before us.
Did they get over it? And then now they're acting like it's us. I'm so confused, because that's what the left always, I mean, oh man, I understand their argument though. Right. Yeah.
Because isn't this the group that is upset at cultural appropriation?
Yes.
So why, I mean,
the Netflix crowd, yes.
Yeah, so why would they not have the same outrage in this misrepresentation of that culture?
I mean, it's really, exactly. And it's really hard to argue with literally the amount of scholars and, I mean, all of the people, the anthropologists, the archaeologists, the historians, the scholars, antiquities minister, current and previous, other, oh man, all these people that have come forward who have blasted Netflix. And then they like submit all of this, you know, the busts, the coinage, the, I don't want to call it a fresco, but the depictions, even in, you know, other, like in the Herculaneum one, etc. Wow, that's like really hard. It's hard to argue with that. When they presented it, I'm just like, I've never seen anything like this in my life. So yeah, Jada Pinkett Smith is getting dragged for this, getting absolute, some might say slapped, but I swear that's not the only reason I like Brock. Cause I was just, I've never seen anything. I mean, on Twitter, oh my gosh. Like, listen to this. This is how it's being portrayed. Like, some of the comments are, identifying Queen Cleopatra as black for fulfilling modern African-American fantasies is theft of Egyptian history and an attempt to rewrite history's greats. Another says, for the nth time, the Egyptian Queen Cleopatra was not an Egyptian. She was Greek, of Macedonian descent, etc. I mean, oh, wow, it is crazy. So I do think, because apparently it's, you know, and I don't know a lot about Cleopatra and the dynasty, but apparently, I mean, it's a very significant part of Egyptian history, and having that distinction is a part of, you know, there is a part of their history. But you're right. I mean, what did you say? Like, say what you were talking about, like in some of your proposals. It's like somebody who's making a movie and they about somebody and they.
Yeah, let's just say we go back in history. We do a movie about MLK and we just have somebody like Woody Harrelson play MLK. Or what if, you know what I mean? What if we have a movie about B.B. King and we just get like Eric Clapton or Slash to play B.B. King? Like, is that acceptable? No. I mean, based on this, it seems like those moves would be acceptable.
Yeah. I mean, there's, I think in the instances where it plays almost itself, a significant portion of the story or of the history, I don't think you can ignore it. I mean, that's, and it's not excluding anything. I mean, it's just the way that something happened. But yeah, you did bring up an interesting point earlier, because with all of the weeping and gnashing of teeth over appropriation, I mean, this seems like, according to what they're all saying, that that's actually appropriation.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, never thought I'd see the day. I've been reading like the back and forth about this for a week and a half. I am absolutely fascinated with it, because somebody on social media, like an actress or an actor or producer, will say something, and then it's like there's like an alarm that goes off somewhere in the pyramids in Giza, and like all of these anthropologists and archaeologists and everyone else come out and they drag this person. It is, yeah. And you would, does Netflix like the attention, do you think? Because
I think
it kind of does make them look silly. If they didn't even consult with any historians, how are they going to call it a docu drama?
Well, people are going to tune in to see if they launch it on the day they're going to launch it, number one. Number two, I think Netflix is playing it smart as far as just allowing this to happen there. They haven't really made any statements about it or anything. They're just sort of promoting this, and they're hoping that a lot of eyes and ears, right now they're getting free press. Look at that. They don't have to pay a dime. And how many outlets are writing about this right
yeah.
now? So, yeah.
That everyone's watching and eating popcorn. I mean, to watch someone be so expertly, scholarly schooled is pretty amazing. One last quick thing. I saw this piece over at The Hill. And I keep seeing the media trying to bait Republicans into behaving a certain way or reacting a certain way. So the headline is, ooh, the memo, Republicans worry DeSantis has aired in Disney feud. So I read this piece. I wasn't even going to talk about it. Someone asked me about it. It just cites like a Republican, doesn't actually put anyone's name on anything. Stop taking bait. Don't take bait like this. This is so dumb. And they aired. The guy ran on this. And not only had a landslide victory, but every other Republican across the state, every statewide office had a landslide victory. Whenever you see headlines like this, compare them to the election results. Just do that, because that ends it, because he ran on that. Oof, my word. Oh, my gosh. All right. We have a lot of still to get into, including some of the Hunter Biden's, the London Roberts, the woman who's the mother of the daughter he refuses to acknowledge, says that he's posing as a destitute artist to try to get out of paying any child support. I mean, the guy, you remember we talked about the house in Malibu that he lived in, the big mansion with Secret Service next door? Yeah, there you go. Your lovable curmudgeon here. Kane and I are on break. We're watching the weather because we turn into amateur meteorologists. So we're like, wait a minute, where's this town at? Oh, if it's like a tiny town that we haven't heard of, where's the, there's movement, there's a funnel. And so we are like, that's what we're going to be doing the rest of the night, dude. You know that?
Yes.
That's what we're going to be doing the rest. It's what I did in Missouri, though, too. Like, it, you know, it doesn't matter. I think like Missouri, Oklahoma, Arkansas, you know, Texas, you know, there's, we all become like expert weather watchers. And it's, is it just, no, I think if you hear the sirens, you need to seek shelter. But do you ever do the thing like, does it sound like a train outside yet? Because when it does, then I'll go. Do you know what I mean? Like, oh, man. I'm telling you what. And I don't know. But we're watching the weather because it got the severe. We thought it was going to be hailing like crazy at this point. And we were worried. We were like, oh, we got backups. We got, you know, worried about the show because Texas shuts down if the rain gets too hard. Them raindrops get too big. So we hope everybody out there in our listening area in Texas stays safe and dry as well. All right. So make sure you sign up for the newsletter over at Chapter and Verse. There's all kinds of stuff that goes out. I also have the notes, which I'm putting stuff in a little bit more regularly. It's just weird stuff that doesn't fit into the newsletter. I'll put it in there as well. So make sure you go and check that out. Go and see that. And we don't forget the bumper track list all over at Spotify. The April one is up there, and I always add to it throughout the month. So we start out kind of small, and then I always grow it every month. So you can find that on Spotify as well. Everything is out there in the link tree that's up on the bio, my bio link. So you can go and find all that jazz. And, of course, you know, who knows what's going to – there's probably going to be like a big news dump, like the second we're off air.
Of course.
That's what happens typically. All right, today in Stupidity, Kane.
Yeah, it happens every week that way. All right, so second gentleman, Doug Emhoff. He's sitting with Kamala Harris and just admits, hey, this is why I'm here. Listen.
Which is the...
For the moment.
Well, look, I'm only here because I'm married to her. Kamala Harris, the
I hate
first
you people.
Female vice president of the United States.
Oh, man.
He sounds, I don't know, he just sounds kind of goofy.
They look like two peas in a pod. With
They're
the
both
laughs
goofy.
And the, yeah, exactly. That's
They're
what I
both
mean.
Goofy people. They so both amazing. Do the awkward laugh. Like, can you imagine them at like a dinner party? It just, I can't. I
She's
can't.
A heartbeat away.
A heartbeat
You know,
away.
You have to be, Kane, you have to be unburdened by what has been.
Oh.
That helps me going into the weekend. Thank
yeah.
you,
Yeah, and, you know, from what was to being unburdened by what was, what has been. You have to. Just what you have to do. Folks, that does it for us this week. Find us on YouTube, Facebook, like, and subscribe. And, of course, I'll be back behind the mic with you on Monday. Stay safe and drive home. God bless.